Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solek. As always, Ben, I got to give you your dues. You're consistent. You're always consistent, so I got to give you your dues.
It's my job, brother.
So, you know what? It is your job, actually. It's...
Yeah, so credit redacted.
Yeah,
take so... Take it away. I don't want it.
Thanks for doing your job. We are moving on with the cornerback class in this summer scouting series. We only have two positions left. I'm already getting graduation goggles. I'm already going to miss the series when we're done. Maybe I won't. We're probably going to do a lot of fun stuff when we're done with this. But I am looking forward to the rest of this cornerback class because the way that we started was really strong. The four guys that we looked at yesterday were a lot of fun, and all I've heard about is this cornerback class is really great. There are even a couple names that we didn't get to yesterday on Monday's podcast that I know I'm really going to enjoy, and in fact, the guy that I teased yesterday's podcast with saying that I think he could be CB1 isn't even in this group.
And yeah, I was wondering about that.
And there are some guys that are like in this group. Ben, who do you want to start with?
Let's start with Isang Bassey.
Isang Bassey.
And he's the Wake Forest corner, and the reason I'd like to start with him is because I just... made double check to make sure I knew how to pronounce his name, and so we should talk about him before I forget how to pronounce it.
Okay, Isang Bassey. Ben cut out a little bit there, but he is the cornerback, outside cornerback for Wake Forest. He's about 5'10", buck 85, buck 90, something like that. He's going into his fourth year. He's got a lot of production. He's been around a lot. He's been playing a lot. He wears number 21, which I've got to say, fantastic cornerback number. So well done there, Isang. He had 16 passes defended, 19 in total if you count the interceptions in 2017, and he had 16 in total if you count the one interception he had in last year. So going in with a lot of experience, a lot of targets, a lot of things thrown his way, but Ben, scouting is often more than the stat sheet. So what did you think about this guy when he was on the field?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely more than the stat sheet. And with Bassey, that is the case. Now, Bassey, like you said, 16 pass breakups last season, 15 the season previous. He is a grand total of 34, I believe, pass breakups, which is fifth on the Wake Forest career list. He had 5 total passes defensed against Syracuse this past season, and that put him one short of the game record total for the Deeks.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be historically disruptive
the
for this
Deeks
program. Yes, the Deeks. Now, shout out to Bo Wolf. Now, ball skills out the wazoo. Like, it's great. I love it. He's a very technically advanced player attacking the catch point. It says he can play closing downhill through the receiver into the catch point. He can play back to the ball through the receiver's eyes into the catch point. He can play downfield, head turn to the ball, elevate for the catch point. He can play zone coverage, overlap, split routes, click and close to the catch point. Like, it's just his explosiveness, his smoothness. He's smooth.
Yeah, I'll definitely give him that.
Pedal, right. And then the knowledge and the timing to attack the catch point, I mean, it's just really, really, really nice to watch. And he's highly effective closing downhill. We talked a bit about Bryce Hall, how much time he spent at the line of scrimmage on yesterday's podcast. Bassey rarely up at the line. Quarters and off cover three is typically what you're getting from Wake Forest, and accordingly, Bassey just plays with everything in front of him. He's a little bit less comfortable when his back is to the football. Now, I have a big problem with Bassey. It's not watching his tape pisses me off. It makes me upset because he's a spectator in the run game.
Does this kid not want anything to do with tackling?
Here's the problem. If you're going to be 5'10", above 90, you're playing nickel in the league. And if you're playing nickel in the league, you're a force player. You trust this kid to play force player right now?
No.
You can't.
No.
You cannot. And when I say playing the force player, right, when we talk about run defense, when runs come into the boundary, so when they go outside of the tackle box, they're not inside of the gaps, You need one of your boundary defenders, an end man on the line of scrimmage or outside, like an overhang or a boundary corner, to come downhill hard and set the edge, be the outside contained player, keep his outside shoulder free. And you want him to do this upfield as close to the line of scrimmage, in the backfield if possible, such as to turn the running back back inside towards help. That's what we call a force player, right? The entire defense is flowing with the running back. The force player stops the running back in his tracks, forces him to come uphill, and then the alley runner, that alley in between the force player and the flow, typically a safety or a linebacker, runs the alley and comes to make the tackle. And that's how we kind of form a spill and then a squeeze, sort of a motion here on the defense. Bassey is, like I said, he's a spectator on the field. I mean, if it's, you know, a nickel corner and he's got to be a force player, no chance. If it's boundary corner and he's got to come upfield against a bubble screen, no chance. He's retreating before he takes on a block. If he gets, God forbid, motioned into a linebacker position because they go empty nub tight end to his side. I mean, it's just he's bailing. He's backing up.
Yeah.
He does not want the physicality. He does not want the smoke. I saw him make a couple of good, you know, alley runs, like I talked about the alley runs, where everything was clean, everything was in front of him. He was the last unblocked man, and he stepped up and he put a shoulder onto a guy. But anytime it comes to taking on blocks, I mean, it's just disappointing effort. And that lack of physicality translates to coverage.
Like, right.
When you match him up with a big guy, it's a problem.
Yeah, and so I was going to say, kind of building off of that a little bit, you talked about the coverage that he mainly plays, and it's a lot of quarters, cover three, it's off stuff. He's very much off of his receiver in whatever way his hips are pointed at the line of, or at the snap. Sometimes it can vary. Sometimes he's even in square up. Sometimes he's in more of a shuffling technique right away. But everything is very off. And the couple of times that I actually saw him be close to the line of scrimmage, you mentioned the word smooth early on there. I think he's a really smooth athlete. I think he's a smooth runner. I think he's smooth in how he moves. And so I actually like him when he's up at the line of scrimmage. You know, I like when he, here's the thing, doesn't have to get too physical with guys, is allowed to just mirror what they're doing, not really get in their face. And when he tracks him down the field, almost in a man coverage kind of a role, I really like that. I thought he showed good skills there, and that's the higher ceiling of being able to play coverage when you can play up like that. But then you notice the stuff in the run game, and then you go, oh, that's why this guy's playing so far off. You know, because I was wondering, I saw his movement skills. I thought it was very fluid, and I thought it was good enough to be able to play closer to the line of scrimmage. And then I put it together. Oh, they don't put this guy at the line of scrimmage, because if somebody starts hand fighting with him, or if somebody starts getting really bump and run with it or whatever, it's over. He doesn't want anything to do with it. So then at that point, I'm looking at a guy who I like the traits for. I like the athletic traits for. He's got good ball skills, like you mentioned. But man, he's just, you know, the ceiling is there. He's a liability in certain areas in the run game, and you're not going to be able to play him in close coverage just because he's not comfortable with it. I mean, dudes only get bigger and stronger in the NFL. There were a couple of reps where I was watching him, and I thought, man, if you get drafted and Julio Jones is standing on the other side of you, you're not covering him with a damn. Julio's going to own you.
Right.
You know, and
right.
that
now, you know, you're a nickel right now, can't cover big slots. And guess what the NFL is putting in the
nickel? Yeah, it's big slots. If you put any tight end, you're coming off the field. Then all of a sudden, you're a nickel formation guy, which even if you want to say that 65% of the league is going to nickel formation, you're then cutting that in. It depends on the percentage every week. Who knows? It might even be more than half. I can't even use you. So that's
right.
Something
that
was really disappointing about him, because there's a lot of athletic traits and smoothness, fluidity that I really like with Bassey, but it's just hard when you don't like being physical that much. It's
right.
it's hard for me to trust you.
You said it really well in the sense that, all right, I love your twitch, I love your fluidity, I love your ball skills. Defensive backs coach going to come into my office as the general manager and say, I like this, this, and this. He's a great cover man. Let's get him on the let's draft him late. I'll make him into something. And then my question goes back to you. How do I roster him in year one? Because he ain't starting in a base nickel set. Maybe he's getting on the field in dime. And if he is, he's still going to be a problem for us. And he's not playing special teams. Doesn't tackle. How am I getting this guy on the how am I justifying him keeping on the 53? Right? And like we're way ahead of ourselves here with, like, you know, Bassey can't be on 53-man roster. You know what I mean? Like, he's got a whole season to be a little more physical. I will say, I think he added mass from 2017 to 2018. Let's keep that going. That's good. That's some more meat on those bones. It's a great move. But like, his product right now, there's so much good stuff in coverage, but I just don't know how I feel comfortable with him on the field.
Which is the part that's good, but I mean, you got to tackle. You got to be a little bit more physical, at least than what we saw on tape this year. All right, who's next? Who you want next?
Well, speaking of guys who are going to have to play nickel at the next level, but actually have the physicality to get involved in the running game, I liked LeVert Hill's film from Michigan a fair bit.
Did you? Okay.
Well, so here's the thing with LeVert Hill, and I was talking with Brad Kelly about this a little bit. Brad's like a closet Michigan fan or whatever. Like he's good with the Michigan kids. I think you watched them a lot last year or whatever. LeVert Hill is too small to play press coverage. And that being said, for him to be as good as he is, technique-wise, in press coverage, is astounding. Like his technique up at the line in terms of in the side shuffle, working the step kick, in terms of placing the hand underneath the arm, marrying that 6-inch punch with his feet and keeping his base grounded, steering guys into the red line while bringing them to the sideline, not throwing the two-handed punch, not getting too far over his toes, flipping his hips, running down the field. Like, his press coverage is butter. And draw it up, it's clinic tape. Problem is he's like 5'9", 185 or something. You know what I mean? He's not long. And so
he's small.
Press technique is effective until the dude opposite you is 6'3", 215.
Right, until
and
he's
then
big.
All of a sudden,
yeah.
Right, is all of a sudden the delta in physicality and in size and in strength is too much even for your technique to overcome. Now,
did you watch the Notre Dame game?
Yes, I did.
Because I thought that the Notre Dame game was actually what you're saying here, a pretty decent example of how, okay, this guy actually does. Because I watched the beginning part of the Notre Dame game, and you watch it and you go, wow, this kid's awful. But then you watch as the game goes on and you go, okay, this guy's got a little bit of skill because Miles Boykin is tall, he's big, he's athletic. And he makes Hill look like he's not even startable, I think, for those first two quarters. But then for a decent amount of the rest of the game,
right,
you can tell that Hill definitely adjusts to it better, which shows that he knows what he's doing. He goes, okay, he's smoking me in this way, so I got to be a little bit less vulnerable here. And he was still vulnerable at times. I mean, like, Boykin was a freak athletically, we figured out, and he's a tall dude. So, I mean, that's just a mismatch from Hill. But I did think that I was super down on Hill when that was actually the first game I watched him. And so I was super down on him that first half. I was like, oh, boy, this kid's bad. But he did get a little bit better, so I'll let you keep you finish your thoughts on him. I probably don't like him as much as you do, but I will say that he got a lot better as certainly that game went on.
Right, and Notre Dame, I'm glad you brought it up as an example. He gets Boykin, he also gets Chase Claypool, another big fella during that game. Boykin beats Hill athletically, despite the fact that, and this was the take that we had on Boykin, when he came out this past year. Boykin's a great athlete. No idea what he's doing in terms of out of line of scrimmage runner routes. Like, just like, you know, and that's fine. Like, this is the thing. Boykin is a 99th percentile athlete for the NFL. He is 3 sigma. And so, yeah, LeVert Hill struggled with his athleticism. Guess what? So did a lot of dudes. You know, like, and so the question becomes, how much can LeVert Hill overcome some athletic deficiencies and some size deficiencies, just we should say in general, at the NFL level? Again, we do not have a guy who's going to be good against big slots. When you put 6'3", 6'4", on him, it's over, right? Like, he can be in perfect position. He's going to get mossed. He's going to get big boyed. But if you're looking for a matchup guy against quicker slots, highly effective feet, fantastic click and close, smart in zones. He doesn't have a ton of experience in off because of Michigan. They're just running, you know, man cover one as much as they possibly can. But you expect him to be an effective off-coverage corner given his physical tools and given his mentality. Now, as I alluded to with Bassey, you know, okay, move Bassey to the nickel. He's a better cover defender there. Sick. That's swell, but he can't defend the run. Long. Huh? Like that's a Don Brown player. If you're not going to come up and hit a guy, you're not going to start on a Don Brown defense, period. And you see that in David Long. He is a very physical guy. He comes up, he initiates contact. When he's addressing blocks, he uses his lower frame well, I think, to generate some initial leverage, which is smart, and he's willing to get his nose in there. Is he an effective tackler? No, he's not. He is small, and he is stubby. He does not have good length, so the tackle radius is small. He's either a diving and drag down guy, or he's missing you. And so he's not a great tackler, but he will absolutely give you a physical presence, at least, coming forward into the backfield to disrupt, to take the running back off of his set path, and that allows your other defenders to make plays. You know, you're not going to get 4 good tackling corners as hard as you want to try in the NFL. And so, you know, there's a way to excuse that. I don't think Long is a top-tier corner or excuse me, LeVert Hill. I didn't think David Long was a top tier corner prospect from Michigan last year. But that's not important. I don't think LeVert Hill is a top tier Michigan corner prospect. He's not, but he's a sub package player, and you can get him on the field.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I think his limitations are what they are. You're not really going to be able to get over him, but that doesn't mean he's a bad football player. I think for how big he is, as long as you're comfortable with that, putting him in a position that might be able to succeed, then he's still a good football player. You just got to know where his limitations are, and I think that's fair, and that's an important part of scouting. We got two guys left. Who you want?
You want to save the best for last?
Sure, why not? We can do that.
All right, let's talk Damon Arnett, corner out of Ohio State.
Yeah, so Damon Arnett, I think Damon Arnett's got decent all-around game. He's a four-star, former four-star guy, been starting at Ohio State for, I think, 2 years now, been contributing for 3 years, came back for a senior season, doesn't happen a lot with the Ohio State corner, so you wonder, okay, what's up with this guy? I'm watching him on tape, and he's fine, he's decent. I think he plays things with a good head on his shoulders. He recognizes things well. And then as I'm watching him, I'm like, oh, he's not fast.
Nope.
And when you learn it really quick when you see him in cover three and when you see him in constant bail technique. He's either in, if he's up at the line of scrimmage, he's using bail. And if he's not, he's staying off the line of scrimmage because he's not fast. He's just not a good athlete. He's not a great athlete is what I mean to say. I think that he's, like I said, solid corner. I really do. I think that he does a lot of things well enough, but he's not a great athlete. That's all there is to it. And when we're talking about cornerbacks and you're not enough, and I already have to be like, yeah, he's not a great athlete. That's not a good thing. That's not a good thing.
Sure. I mean, like, I'll put it this way. I want Damon Arnett to be my corner four so badly. Like, that's great because he can play outside and inside. He can play multiple techniques.
He's a good corner.
He's smart, right? Like, he's fine, and it's fine to be fine sometimes. You know, like, that's okay. Is he going to be – actually, I was about to say, is he going to be a highly drafted Ohio State corner? And then I was going to answer my rhetorical question with a no, but the problem is it's an Ohio State corner, and he's probably going to get a premium accordingly. Like, Arnett is – quick, but he's not lightning quick. And he's fluid, but he's not like silky. And he's explosive, but he's not dynamic. Like like I said, he's fine. He's got good physical traits in mirror coverage and coming out of short zones. But it's not world beating. I'm just so worried people are gonna see the stickers on the helmet. They're gonna see the colors. Mm-hmm. And that's kinda gonna finish the scouting report for them. You know, they're just going to kind of inflate his ability accordingly. I will say two things about Arnett that I really, really appreciated. Number one, you know, and you brought this up in terms of he's coming back as a fifth-year senior. Ohio State, I don't know if you heard, they get a lot of talent in their secondary. Arnett directs. Arnett's the captain on the field, right? So he's when there's motion, Arnett's making audibles. He's organizing calls. He's getting guys situated.
Yeah.
And he's highly effective in terms of passing off routes, reading through bunch sets, reading through stack sets, and getting to where he needs to go. Mm-hmm. Head for the game, and I talk all the time. It's one of my favorite things, that ingrained intuition. Like, you're on the field a lot. You've seen it a lot. You just start to know it faster. So I think Arnett is a smart player in that regard, number one. And then number two, not super huge, not super long, competitive, physical. He will get up in your grill at the line of scrimmage. He will get up in your grill down the field, and he will – I talked about this with Bryce Hall. Pass breakups aren't always my hand gets up into your catch point and gets there. If I get physical with you when you're in the air, if I get physical with you when you're just trying to turn to the football, make that catch difficult, make you have to work at an odd angle, that's just as effective. And Arnett has a good sense of timing and that ability to play physical without drawing too many penalties. Now, he peaks a lot. He really likes to play with his eyes in the backfield. And so accordingly, like when he gets into trail tech, you talk about this and not being slow. When he gets into trail tech, he wants to turn around and he's got to really iron out that desire, that habit, because it's what puts him in gravity situations. So I like his physicality, but because he's not super fast and he's a backfield watcher, he likes to peak, then we get into gravity situations. So really he's got to become more comfortable in the trail for that reason. But there's, like I said, does a lot of things well enough to be rostered and to be a trustworthy backup.
He's a good corner. He's just not a great athlete. There's a lot of things that he does well. He's just not a great athlete. The things that come to being an athlete with the position, even like you said there, being a trail, he's just not comfortable with. And that's the way that it is. And that's kind of the way that you got to look at it. And that's why he didn't go out last year, because the NFL looked at him and they went, yeah, you're not getting drafted in the first 2 days. And then at that point, when you get a, go back to school grade, okay, just go back to school. But if you want to know why, that's why. He's not a good athlete.
Right. The last one of his oh, man, I just ruined such a good segue because you ended with he's not a good athlete.
Yeah, you did.
Man, I'm a bad, okay, I'm really, a bad friend.
You really did.
You
have to, you have to seg, you have to segue us now.
All right. In one of Matt Miller's notebooks from last year, he said that some scouts had Arnett as a potential first rounder when he comes out, which, again, I'm really worried that that's Ohio State inflation. That's not inflation.
No.
Yeah. But anyway, speaking of good athletes.
Here it is.
Hey.
He brought us home. Jeff Gladney, TCU, hello. Texas hello. Christian University.
Hello.
I am Jeff Gladney came in at number 13 on Bruce Feldman's freak list this year, and I'll read it to you. The top cover man in the Big 12, Gladney had the lowest passer rating allowed, 46.9, according to PFF, and had a team-high 13 pass breakups, which placed second in the Big 12. The 100,
is that good?
It is good. The 185-pound Gladney isn't just extremely fast, although he ran a 4.34 40-yard dash this offseason, but he's insanely strong for his size. According to the Horned Frog staff, which I wrote about as one of the best weightlifting staffs in the entire country, you can go read it over at thedraftnetwork.com, he squats, now remember, this kid is 185 pounds. He squats 620 benches 400 and cleans 400, which is just absolutely stupid.
Might be a lot.
And he's also a good cornerback.
I love that beautiful transition there at the end. Talking about segues. That was gorgeous.
There you go. So he, I'm looking at his, hold on, let me. Played in 12 games with 8 starts his redshirt freshman year, 11 starts his sophomore year, started all 13 games last year, and obviously had the shutdown numbers that we talked about before. He's a really good corner, man. Goes up against a heavy passing attack and a passing conference every single week.
Well, yeah. I mean, if we can't figure out if Jeff Gladney is good or not by the end of the past couple years for him, we suck at this.
Of course.
Because last year, it was Akeem Butler, Colin Johnson, CeeDee Lamb and Marquise Brown, Tylan Wallace. This year he gets Colin Johnson again, he gets CeeDee Lamb again, he gets Tylan Wallace again, he gets Denzel Mims, he gets somebody else who's good. I had this written down, but it's not in front of me right now. I'm going to tell you who it is. Texas Tech, he gets TJ Vasher. Who else? West Virginia, he got like David Sills. That doesn't really count. There's a lot of good. There's a lot. Rondell Moore. They play Purdue this year.
Perfect.
So listen. If he's going to play 7 different NFL wide receivers, potential like 4th round picks or higher, over the course of 2 years.
All right.
If we can't figure out if he's good, we got to give up.
He went up against Tylan Wallace last year, and Tylan Wallace had one of the worst games of his season. While being guarded by Jeff Gladney.
And Gladney is the exact sort of receiver to handle Wallace, because Wallace is used to being able to outrun everybody and outbreak everybody. And Jeff Gladney, who does not exactly know what he's doing with his feet, doesn't really need to know what he's doing with his feet because they are quick.
He does. It's just that it's good that you can see that he has success without being a perfect product yet. So that tells you, wow, once we get this guy some feet, a little bit more control of what he does. Boy, he's a great athlete. I watched him against.
If you put LaVert Hill's footwork on Jeff Gladney, round one, end the game.
Oh, easily. Yeah, easily.
Yep.
No question about it.
Now, the thing with Gladney is, and I think this is really well inscribed in the Colin Johnson game and the Hakeem Butler game, 2018 mm-hmm. Iowa State and Texas.
Yes.
Gladney's a big boy, but Colin Johnson and Hakeem Butler are bigger. And Gladney is very willing to play physical, and you win some and you lose some when you're going to play with that mold of coverage. Now, he could increase his success rate playing with physicality, playing up in the line of scrimmage, if he was smarter with his feet. And this goes back to, again, like a common theme I like to hit on. When you're just a world-class athlete and you're so used to out-athleting the people you line up against, once you hit those NFL caliber players and all of a sudden you need to rely on that technique, it better be there. And Gladney doesn't exactly have that. And there's reps against Butler, great pass breakup against Butler. There's reps against Colin Johnson, sticky coverage down the field, where like his feet aren't where they're supposed to be, and his hips aren't where they're supposed to be. He's playing with the wrong leverage. He's backpedaling 12 yards down the freaking field, but he's so quick and he's so explosive that he survives against NFL caliber players, which is huge. And if you get this guy to play when he's playing physical, to play a little more smarter with lower hips, a wider base, and a cognizance of, okay, I'm playing physical not to destroy you, not to put you 8 yards back and totally eliminate you, but just to steer you where I want you to go. Because, again, I talk about press coverage. Press coverage is in the feet and it's not in the hands, right? It's not about I'm going to punch you into oblivion. It's about, you know, with my hands, I'm going to help control where you go, but my feet are what's going to guide you to where I want you to be and always be ready to redirect. And Gladney narrows his base. He's 6'2", and he gets upright, and he caps his own ability to redirect. And if you fixed that, the quickness, the explosiveness, the strength, and then the physicality, the competitiveness, the ability to attack the catch point on this kid, it's everything. I mean, press, man, corner, sign, seal, delivered, I'm yours. It's there. You just simply, right now, you're taking a player who's a sublime athlete and saying, listen, however it makes the most sense for you, go do it, because you're going to be able to stop 95% of the receivers that you face. Mm-hmm. I know I brought up a bunch of good receivers, but like, I love Tylan Wallace. Gladney was enough of an athlete to pace him everywhere.
Totally.
And then Wallace did not know how to get off press coverage.
Totally.
So Gladney only needed to hit him, and it was ball game, right?
Yep.
And so if we watch a player in Gladney who goes up against a Rondale Moore, a Denzel Mims, a Tylan Wallace again, right? Some of the better guys getting off the line of scrimmage that he'll face. And if he can get smarter with his feet, more measured in his press, utilize the step kick, get out of the soft shoeing, the mirror technique, oh, man, sky is the limit. This is an athlete at the corner position that is beyond irregular, that is like an elite wide receiver out there playing defense. And it's just so exciting to watch. Yes, he has some bad film. But, I mean, it's July, and I'm looking at the good stuff.
Bad film just because it's a little unrefinement. I mean, I think this guy's got a great mold that you can really talk yourself into as a guy that can really match up against a lot of different receivers in the NFL. So I'm with you in a lot of the positives that you like for him. I think he's got a good skill set for the game, and I think that his highs, what you enjoy from a strength and speed profile, being able to keep with guys and match with guys, he has that right now, and there's not a lot of refined technique to what he does. So give me that. Give me a good cornerback coach. We're cooking with gas. You know, we're talking about potentially a really good cornerback prospect.
I mean, he's going to be a guy where, like, you know, we might end up liking some of the more polished players in this class better than him, but a team's going to take him round one because their corner coach talked everybody into the fact that he could make him the next Pat Pete, right? Which, like, I'm not calling him the next Pat Pete. I'm just saying, when you look at him from an athletic perspective,
that's what I heard.
I can sell you on it.
No,
you
know I'm putting that in the description of the podcast of today's episode.
Ben calls an unproductive TCU corner the next Patrick Peterson.
I can't wait to write exactly that. We got four more corners that we're talking about tomorrow. Maybe it'll be the guy that I think could be CB1. We've already mentioned
100% will be, because I now realize who you thought it was.
we've already mentioned three or four guys that could be first-round corners. So the fact that we haven't mentioned a guy that I think could be the best of all of them really tells you how good this cornerback class is. I'm excited to get to him and the rest of the guys could follow, because we're going to find some diamonds in the rough. And by that, I mean probably some more top 50 corners. This class is going to be heavily loaded for defensive backs. So if your NFL team needs one, you should be paying attention.
Imagine spending a week on linebackers when this class was upcoming. Could not have been us.
Oh, boy. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness we did not do that.
Thank goodness we made it to here. We got an exciting week ahead. So until then, you guys, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.